Radio.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at RadioAryan.com. Welcome to Truthful Out Radio. Today's date is Friday, the 21st of December, 2018, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and we're broadcasting live at RadioAryan.com today because we have the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Backdoor, and the Freemasonic Victors of World War II with us on this winter solstice evening. Dennis, how are you doing today?
Well, Sven, it's never good being in the headquarters of the KGB all day. And that's exactly where I've been, the dentist, and I'm convinced she's got the NKVD certificate of pain.
I thought you were going to say you'd been there in the job centre or somewhere like that, but I think they've done away with all of them now. I think you just have to do it all online.
They probably have, yes.
Well, I think you're pretty close there with the dentist anyway, with all the pain that causes.
Oh, that drill. My word.
Well, I'm very glad you were actually able to speak now. Wasn't your mouth all numbed up?
No, well, there was no injection, that didn't help. Like I said, it's pretty brutal.
It is with no injection. That's sort of going back a couple of 100 years or so in time. It's medieval.
Well, she'd all the credentials of the NKVD. I didn't tell her that, you know.
Well, it's a shame. I don't understand why we have to, you know, get our teeth done. It doesn't make sense to me that you'd have these creatures called plaque in your mouth, and it doesn't actually do anything but rot your teeth. I mean, what good is plaque? Why do we have it? What's it there for? What was it created for? Nothing but rotting your teeth. It's something that just doesn't make any sense.
Well, keeps her in a job.
Yeah, I suppose. Makes jobs for dentists.
Probably better than being out of it all, isn't it?
Well, I've got a little bit of a treat actually for the listeners and for us to listen to tonight to begin with. And this was actually sent in by someone in the comments, and they sent this link in, which is supposed to be the Wehrmacht singing Silent Night in 1942. And I don't know the background to this. Have you heard of this before, Dennis?
No, I haven't, but I'm just saying that. It's very pagan, isn't it?
Very pagan, yeah. Yes. They're celebrating Yuletide, dancing around a bonfire while singing Silent Night over the radio.
Exactly.
But yeah, have a listen to this. And it starts off with basically the leaders of the Wehrmacht, wherever they are around the world at that time, and they're obviously calling in to the radio station, and then they sing this live, and yeah, it's very moving. But yeah, have a listen to it, and then we'll come back afterwards. So be prepared for it to sort of not make a lot of sense until the music comes in.
Achtung an alle! Noch einmal sollen sich nun unter dem Eindruck dieser Stunden, die wir zusammen erlebten, alle Kameraden an den entferntesten Übertragungsstellen melden und Zeugnis ablegen durch ihren Ruf von dem umfassenden Erlebnis dieser unserer Ringsendung. Achtung, ich rufe noch einmal den Eismeerhafen Lienerhamerich. Achtung, ich rufe noch einmal Stalingrad.
Hier ist Stalingrad, hier ist die Front an der Wolga.
Achtung, noch einmal die Lapplandfront.
Hier ist die Baracke im finnischen Winterwald.
Achtung, noch einmal Südfrankreich, die Luftwaffe.
Hier ist ein Feldflugplatz in Südfrankreich.
Und noch einmal die Kriegsmarine und das Heer in Südfrankreich.
Hier ist Flavio-Kampf an der französischen Riviera.
Achtung, Achtung, noch einmal der Kampfraum um Rzeszów.
Hier ist die Front südwestlich Kurve von Kalinin. Der Kampfraum um Rzeszów.
Achtung, der Ruf noch einmal zum Golf von Biskaya.
Hier ist die Hafenstadt an der südfranzösischen Atlantikküste.
Achtung noch einmal, Leningrad.
Hier kommt vor Leningrad und Apolchow.
Achtung, die Kanalküste.
Hier Sicherungsverbände der Kriegsmarine am Kanal.
Achtung noch einmal, die Kaukasusfront.
Hier meldet sich die Front im Kaukasus.
Achtung, die U-Boot-Fahrer im Atlantik.
Hier ist ein Unterseebootsstützpunkt am Atlantik.
Achtung, Catania.
Hier ist die Mittelmeerfront und Afrika.
Achtung, Zakopane.
Aus dem Heeresgenesungsheim in der Tatra grüßen die Verwundeten ihre Kameraden an den Fronten.
Achtung noch einmal, Kreta. Achtung noch einmal, der Schwarzmeerhafen.
Noch einmal der Schwarzmeerhafen auf der Halbinsel Krim. Wir bitten euch, Kameraden, jetzt in das schöne, alte deutsche Weihnachtslied in der Nacht mit einzustimmen.
Diesem spontanen Wunsch unserer Kameraden fern drunten und drüben am Schwarzmeer schließen sich nun alle Stationen an. Jetzt singen sie schon am Eismeer und in Finnland. Und jetzt singen sie im Kampfraum von Reschef. Und jetzt schalten wir dazu alle die anderen Stationen, Leningrad, Stalingrad. Und jetzt kommt dazu Frankreich, kommt dazu Catania und singt Afrika. Und nun singt alle mit uns gemeinsam in dieser Minute das alte deutsche
quite moving, that, I think, to imagine that, you know, that's all voices from beyond the grave, and you think what happened to them and how many of them maybe survived the war, and to think, you know, I don't know how many times anything like that was ever even attempted, to get people from all different locations across the world on or across Europe. I mean, one of those...
Yeah, it sounded like... I was just going to say, it sounded like Eurovision Song Contest, like when they're going, like, you know, the submarines in the Atlantic. And
they had Africa there as well. They had Africa, yeah. Lapland, Stalingrad, Leningrad, all over singing that.
Yeah.
And YouTube banned it. I just don't understand that. No, YouTube banned it. I couldn't watch it at all. Yeah, I couldn't watch it. I couldn't get a proxy server to let me watch it. I ended up having to just get the audio. Without actually seeing what the picture was, using one of those software apps for doing that. And it's just, why would they ban something like that?
Well,
why would they do
German it? German and Christian.
Yeah, but it's not hate speech. It's not Holocaust denial. It's just German soldiers singing a hymn, and what it does, it humanizes them. And they can't stand that. They can't stand to have that happen. Even 70 years past the war and they still cannot stand to have anything positive about the Germans anywhere. It's shocking.
Indeed.
Yes, other
secrets. And the secret, you know, the secret of it all is that was a holy war and they don't want people to know that one.
Well, yeah, I mean, again, that makes it clear that they were Christian. I mean, that's what, wasn't it they were singing Silent Night? That's when they stopped fighting during the First World War and had the football match when they heard the Germans singing Silent Night and it was in German lyrics.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with Hitler's version on that because he said, like, you know, they are the enemy and, you know, tomorrow they will be killing each other. So pointless exercise in my eyes, that one. Yeah, but he said wrong.
He wanted it to be over with as quickly as possible. And by doing that, it meant that it wasn't over with as quickly as possible. But what it shows is, you know, the Germans have been so dehumanized that the British, when they were fighting against them, that they were shocked to hear that the Germans were singing the same hymns that they sang back at home in Britain. And it humanized them, and it humanized them as Christians. And again, that's what's happening here. It humanizes the Germans as Christians, not as pagans, not as anti-Christians, but all getting together so that they could sing this Christian hymn and using the military radio for doing so. And that has to be censored, along with the other subject that we're going to be talking about tonight, which is these Polish papers that I think we made reference to last week, didn't you, Dennis?
Yeah, this all stems from what I'm trying to do with the last couple of episodes, maybe the last episode, I don't know yet, of the Masonic victory, is to try and prove that when the world thought that Germany was out to rule the world, that wasn't the case. The case was all Hitler was trying to do was destroy this Versailles Treaty, which was made, in fact, to actually strangle Germany eventually. And to do that, he had to do certain things, and right up to Poland, everything was fine. Nobody lost any lives. No blood was spilled. So there was two things what I was trying to prove. And that was obviously, they often say these massacres, which Germany insisted on before the invasion, they claim that the massacres came after. Well, it's not the easiest thing, I don't suppose, to prove, but there were experts at the time, I found out, real experts, medical people who diagnosed that obviously the decaying of the body proved that it was well before the Germans invaded. So Germans were dying before that, you know, before the invasion. Obviously, when the invasion occurred, the wrath was led out on the German prisoners, and many were hung or beaten savagely to death. And so to prove this other point of Germany not wanting to start the war, they didn't want a world war, then we've got to look at these secret documents which have turned up.
Okay, well, quoting from this article here, the Germans seized a mass of documents from the Polish Ministry of Foreign Affairs when they invaded Warsaw in late September 1939. The documents were seized when a German SS brigade led by Freiherr von Kungsberg captured the centre of Warsaw ahead of the regular German army. Von Kunzberg's men took control of the Polish Foreign Ministry just as ministry officials were in the process of burning the incriminating documents. These documents clearly established Roosevelt's crucial role in planning and instigating World War II. They also reveal the forces behind President Roosevelt that pushed for war. And these documents formed the main basis of the White Book that we were talking about a couple of weeks back. These are the real, you know, the real smoking gun, as it were, with these documents. So, you know, they've obviously tried to silence this quite a lot. But what do you think about this, about Roosevelt and this allegation that he was pushing for war and that he was planning it and instigating it? Because that wasn't what was being told to the public, was it?
Was far from it. If you remember, at the end of The Great Story Never Told, he was actually talking to an SS bodyguard, and the SS bodyguard actually asked him, you know, was Poland necessary? Did you really have to invade? And he actually said to, you know, I mean, it was translated, I can't remember the guy now who does it, but You probably know him if I found his name. Anyway, he said that, no, there was nothing he could do. He knew that Roosevelt was behind the pushing of trying to get into the war, well, at least France and England. And I know at one stage he offered France, if France didn't join Britain, they would not get the aid they required. But if they joined Britain in a war with Poland, Roosevelt promised them the earth.
And he had lots of Jewish friends and backers, didn't he? Bernard Baruch and lots of bankers that were encouraging this. And they wanted to portray America as the defender of freedom and democracy and individual liberty. And they wanted to portray fascism as being against all of that. And Roosevelt was bragging that he was one of the first people to speak out against fascism. And all of this was with the encouragement of these very rich Jewish backers that were in America at the time. And these documents show basically the Polish ambassador that's in America, he's reporting back to Poland, and he talks about all of this. And he confirms all of this. And of course, this is what the Germans were saying.
And at the same time, you've got to remember, when they're doing the propaganda against the Germans, because nobody, I've said this many times, nobody knew what was going on in Europe at the time. That's why so many US historians have fallen, you know, where it was concerned. They just haven't seen it because they've been brainwashed with this, what was coming out of Europe, what the US wanted them to hear. But the thing was, at the same time as they were demonising fascism, they were treating communism with kid gloves, you know, like this friendly neighbourhood who will help us defend democracy. When all the time the Bolsheviks were going into these sovereign nations and taking them down.
Oh, well, don't forget, Poland had already had problems with the Bolsheviks at the end of the war. We talked about that last week as well, didn't we? That not a lot of people talk about it, but the Poles pushed the Bolsheviks back at the end of the First World War. So they were acutely aware of the threat that the Bolsheviks posed. And then you've got the Polish ambassador in America, and he notices that there's no mention of the Bolsheviks at all in the press. It's all about Germany. It's all about the threat that National Socialist Germany poses, when the real threat was the Bolsheviks.
Yeah, but the Bolsheviks, like I said, I've had this strong England for a while now. If they win the revolution, the bankers win the revolution, then they control Russia. And, you know, the Bolsheviks were their invention type of thing. So I'm pretty sure that the Bolsheviks were quite, you know, under orders from these bankers. We found in Spain itself, in the Spanish Revolution, that the bankers were caught funding it through the Soviet Union. So, you know, that's a prime example. But it's like Poland, I mean, the British, we were Poland, weren't so much that the British loved Poland that much, because the excuse they gave of why they put this guarantee up for Poland and its aggression, it's Great Britain searched in a blue book that she was compelled to guarantee Poland against aggression for reason of international morality. Whereas the British government subsequently admitted, and this is Under Secretary of the State Butler, House of Commons, October 1939, that the guarantee was aimed solely against Germany. So it didn't really matter who else invaded Poland. They weren't right bothered. They were just out to, you know, start a war with Germany.
It's interesting that they mention international morality there. The idea of this international law and this new world order, international courts, international agencies, all of this sort of came about this time as they were sort of coalescing everything together. And the Bolsheviks were part of it. I think they wanted the Bolsheviks to take over Europe. And then they were obviously doing the bidding of the bankers. They were run by Jews. And that would have been the start of the New World Order. But Hitler got in the way of that when he protected Western Europe. And we've got to remember at the time, I mean, now we just on our computer screens, we can find out the news all over the world. But back then, everyone was just reliant on newsreels at the cinema.
Radio,
And newspapers and radio. And if you were very lucky, I mean, in Britain, if you were able to hear the German radio that they put out during the war in English, apparently 80% of British households tuned in to the radio that was put out by Germany. But if you're in America, you're not even going to have a chance to hear that.
No.
All they had in America was what the Jewish press told them about. And that was right. It. There was no way to find anything else out.
Well, a prime example of that, you know, was when Max Schmeling fought Joe Louis the second time. He beat Louis in Germany, and Louis fights him again in America. And, you know, Max Schmeling arrives in America, just been lives banging outside his hotel bedroom. He's not allowed his manager in his corner or his men. And consequently, he's beaten in the first round. But he's a beaten man before he gets into the ring with what was going on. This hatred, atmosphere of hatred of Nazis, obviously, you know, it's a heavy burden. And really, right at the end, when Joe Louis was struggling and he had no money, it was Max Schmeling who came up with some money to help him. So, you know, it just turns itself on its head.
Was that a boxing match that went on at the time?
Yeah. Joe Louis is quite a famous boxer in his time in America, but he was beaten in Germany by Max Schmeling and then regained his title by knocking him out in the first round in America. But like I said, there was a lot of shenanigans going on all the time that Max Schmeling was there, and this hatred for Germans and Nazis was a fever pitch.
Right, that just shows you the effect of a negative atmosphere can have as well, I guess. Right. If he beat him when he was on his home turf in Germany, and then was beaten when he went back over there to America, was America aware of the fact that he'd been beaten in Germany?
Oh yeah. I mean, they built it up as a racist thing. Obviously, Joe Louis is black, Max Schmeling is white, and so it's this all racism, Nazism. All this came to fore, and like a fanatical crowd and fanatical press. And even, like I said, before him, the fight, you know, he never got a decent night's sleep. Everything was set against him just to make sure that Joe Louis beat him.
Right. I don't really follow the boxing that much, but the whole sporting thing around this time is interesting with the Olympics as well and what went on there.
Yeah.
I mean, Hitler, you know, he wasn't against the blacks that were taking part against that runner.
Yes,
it was portrayed that he was in the press, wasn't it? In America, it was portrayed.
Well, that's it. All these American historians have been fed this since them days and just blind to the socialism of Adolf Hitler was totally different to the socialism of the Soviets. Totally different.
Well, they've hidden the documents as well. That's the thing. They've only got the historians will only look at what was produced at the Nuremberg trials, and the Germans weren't allowed to produce their own evidence there. They were only allowed to use the evidence that was handed to them by the victorious Allies. Let's get into some more of what's actually in these documents then. Some of the secret Polish documents were first published in the United States as the German White Paper. Probably the most revealing document in the collection is a secret report dated January the 12th, 1939, by Jerzy Potocki, the Polish ambassador to the United States. This report discusses the domestic situation in the United States, and this is from his report. They did everything in painting the Germans black. Above all, religious persecution and the concentration camps are exploited. This propaganda is extremely effective, since the public here is completely ignorant and knows nothing of the situation in Europe. It is interesting to note that in this extremely well-planned campaign, which is conducted above all against National Socialism, Soviet Russia is almost completely absent. Soviet Russia, if mentioned at all, is mentioned in a friendly manner, thanks to this clever propaganda. The sympathies of the American public are completely on the side of Red Spain. President Roosevelt was the first one to express hatred against fascism. In doing so, he was serving a double purpose. First, he wanted to divert the attention of the American people from difficult and intricate domestic problems, especially from the problem of the struggle between capital and labor. Second, by creating a war psychosis and by spreading rumours concerning dangers threatening Europe, he wanted to induce the American people to accept an enormous armament programme which far exceeds United States defense requirements. Now, do you think where he's talking there, that those armaments were actually to go to Soviet Russia with, you know, this great build-up of tanks that they had?
No.
Or do you think this was
I think he's talking about what Roosevelt wanted to do was send planes to Poland. But obviously, they're a neutral country, so the only way that he thought they might be able to do that, and he wanted to get planes to France as well, was through Britain. You know, they would have done it through a back door. I think it was something, the normal defence budget was something like 500 million, and that was doubled in this particular time, which was obviously peacetime for America. But he tended to con people for the reason for doing it. You know, he never gave much away on it.
And this Polish ambassador is wondering why this is, because the war hasn't started, and he's wondering why America is building up all these weapons. I find it interesting he's referring to this so-called religious persecution and concentration camps, and that's what's being highlighted in the media at the time. They're trying to paint Germany as if they were persecuting Christianity, I guess, is what it means there. And
that's what it is.
And the fact they had camps, and, you know, having concentration camps, it was the British that started doing that. And America did it during the Second World War as well. And I guess during the First World War, they must have done. Britain did it, really. They locked up, obviously, they locked up any Germans that were in Britain during the war. They even locked up British people with that Regulation 18B, where they locked up all the nationalists in Britain. So, I mean, it's quite clear in this report that he's thinking, what's going on here? Why are they attacking Germany? Now, do you think it's suspicious that this is a Polish guy that's noting this?
No, because I don't think this particular guy were friendly to Germany. It's just, I think he realised that there were more to it than the Jews involved in this. We're obviously going to make great strides in their agenda.
Well, I mean, he's already mentioned that Soviet Russia is completely absent. And the next quote from here is, the controlled media deliberately portrayed National Socialism as the world's greatest evil, when the endless atrocities of the Bolshevik expansion into sovereign nations were in fact the world's greatest evil and threat. So what he's concerned about is the fact that Bolshevism isn't being highlighted. National Socialism is instead. So you think that's his overriding issue, and the Jews that were involved in this?
Right next door to Russia, they've had problems from them before, like I said, back in 1920, but they managed to back them off. But this time, I mean, this thing about Britain just concentrating on, you know, this guarantee against Germany and nobody else, because that Stalin invaded Poland 2 weeks after Hitler, and nothing was said, even when they were gathering Poles up and putting them on the trains and shipping them off to the gulags. Britain said nothing, stay silent. So you tell me, and even at the end of the war, Churchill didn't hesitate in handing them all back to the NKVD.
When did the Kachin massacre happen?
That came during that period when the Russian invasion, and by the time the Germans had they invaded 2 weeks before, but they found these, more than just one, really. There's a few massacre pits. It's exactly what the communists have always done. They'll go in and they'll take out the elite, the army, you know, anyone who could kind of source a kind of a rebellion against them. They just wipe out, and they did that in their own country. So, yeah, and Germany obviously came across these, brought in international, obviously, people to come and inspect and say, look, this is what the Russians have done, and it returned again. I mean, Roosevelt knew and Churchill knew at the time, but they didn't reveal anything at all, not even at Nuremberg. And only in the 70s, I think it was, when it finally the Germans were cleared.
So the Germans went in and they occupied half of Poland, and then the Russians went in 2 weeks later and occupied the other half. And in the half that the Russians occupied, they carried out this Kachin massacre. And then when the Germans went into Russia, the Germans went into the previously Russian-occupied part of Poland and discovered it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Well, they'd have to go through Poland to get to Russia.
Right. Okay, I got you. So that's the course of events there. And then at the end of the war, Poland was just handed back over to Russia again, the whole of it.
Just on the back of scribbled on the back of a piece of paper, according to the great story.
Unbelievable. And then the Poles that were in Britain, the rightful government, they were just sent back there to be massacred.
Well, no, not all of them. Some did go back and some were taken to where I was today, the KGB headquarters. But others went to Canada, believe it or not. They couldn't say any worthwhile attempt to go back and change things because they would have felt it was dangerous. But I know some of the official government were taken to the KGB centre and then were on trial and executed.
So the French have an armistice. They have an agreement with Germany, and they're not at war. And Britain has this French government, this illegal French government that is encouraging terrorism in France.
Yeah.
And at the end of the war, the terrorist government that encouraged all the terrorism, they're given France. And the Poles, they have a government in waiting. That's in Britain as well, but they don't get Poland back. Poland just gets handed over to the Russians. I mean, it just shows you that there's no consistency there, is there? It shows you that there's
no loyalty, no.
There's another agenda.
It's just a shrug of the shoulders, isn't it? Sorry, boys. You know.
Yeah. France can help, but you can't.
The Poles would have looked at Churchill as if to say, well, Churchill would have said, look, you can't expect us to go to war with the Russians. Whereas what I think happened is that it was agreed. You know, Churchill, you know, the bankers would have, look, hand over Poland to the Soviet Union, and Churchill would have done exactly that.
And he did do exactly that.
Yeah.
If only this ambassador had realised what was really going on. We've got another quote from him here. This is from March the 7th, 1939. And he sends back another report on Roosevelt's foreign policy to the Polish government. The current government would be glad to see the Red Army emerge as the victor in a conflict with Japan. That's why the sympathies of the government are clearly on the side of China, which recently received considerable financial aid amounting to $25 million. And that's Red China, that's Communist China. And they backed the Communists instead of backing the Nationalists in China, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they're backing Communists wherever they go at the moment. They're backing the Bolsheviks, they're backing the Chinese. And they stabbed them in the back at the end of the war, didn't they? Because I think Chiang Kai-shek was a national leader, a nationalist rather, and they stabbed him in the back and gave the job to Mao Zedong. But they would do because, like I said, this is a banker's war with communism as their aim. I'm quite sure they gave Stalin the order to invade Europe. And as you said, Hitler got wind of it. And in the end, he held it all up, probably saved half of Europe, but he'll never get the praise.
Well, this poll is obviously really sort of questioning what's going on, why America is doing this. And he also says, many in both houses have come out strongly against the president. The representatives and the senators were especially...
What a lie this is.
Yeah, we're especially...
Oh, sorry,
yeah, the representatives and the senators were especially upset over the remarks of the president, which were published in the press, in which he said that the borders of the United States lie on the Rhine.
What a line.
And that's really...
and believe it or not, they do now.
That really is overreaching, isn't it?
Yeah, well, that shows his intentions. Of, I think what we miscalculated is... You know, the D-Day landings were shown as a liberation of Europe to the Allies. But what it really was an intended invasion of Germany, of Roosevelt's years before. Always intended it.
Well, that shows it, doesn't it? I mean, that 1939, yeah. That was said. and he let that slip out. In Germany, Germany liberated Europe from the bankers, and we had a free Europe, and then it was taken back for the New World Order, and straight away it was time to start the race replacement and open the borders up to the Third World and sort out the European Union. And everything since then shows that we lost the war, basically. And it shows us that we were fighting the wrong enemy. We were fighting ourselves. We were fighting our brothers. And all the while, we had this external enemy who the traitors among us were working with. And ever since the end of the war, they've carried out their plans to exterminate us, basically. Genocide us.
Well, they've turned on us, haven't they? All the countries, presumed they'd won the World War, have all been turned on. Britain, France, you know, that's a jungle now.
And people just don't see it. I mean, over in Russia, they'll still celebrate the liberation of Europe. And it's a big fundamental myth that their nation is built upon, is the Great Patriotic War.
Believe it or not, I heard this thing the other day, by the way, that people in Germany, even today, are still not allowed to mourn the fallen of World War II, the Germans. Not allowed to mourn them.
Well, they're supposed to see it as something positive, aren't they? They're supposed to be, you know, cheering on the firebombing, and that was all necessary to rid the world of the threat of Nazism. And all it's brought is us being replaced in our own countries and prosecuted for speaking up about it. And a huge, great crime.
Their guilt. We've got their guilt now.
Oh, yeah. Made to feel guilty for it. I mean, we're all supposed to feel guilty for not going in there and rescuing these Jews when it was white Europeans that died en masse in that war.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Was it 40 million Europeans or something like that died in the war?
Well, somebody said to me the other day, well, so do you not believe in the Holocaust? So I believe in the Holocaust, yeah. I know Dresden happened.
Well, I mean, we don't even know the rough numbers of the white Europeans that died in the war. I mean, should know that off by heart. And instead, we just know this number of how many Jews died in the war. And all our monuments are to the Jews. They're building a huge, great monument outside the Houses of Parliament to the Holocaust. Not to the dead of Europe in this stupid brothers' war, this conflict that never should have happened, but a monument to a foreign people. That now run our banks and are in every country as advisors. Every one of the countries that was at Versailles, they all had a Jewish advisor telling them what to do at that conference, which led to the Second World War.
What they're planning to do with the Holocaust is they're going to keep that going to teach every generation exactly what they've been teaching everybody since, so that it's easier for them to do things like race mix, and you've seen yourself the effect on Germans welcoming them in. It's just committing suicide. But it makes it easier for them to get their agenda. So they're going to keep this Holocaust thing going. And our children and your grandchildren, etc., you know, they've got this to come. You know, they're going to look at Nazis. A lot of people are going to look at Nazis for a long, long time as pure evil. That's their intention.
Well, they say that, don't they? They say it's absolutely imperative that we must drum into the next generation the horrors of the Holocaust, because a lot of them don't know what it is, or they don't know how much the Jews suffered, and they have to be taught this to prevent nationalism ever rising its head again. And what is nationalism? It's looking out for your own family. It's making sure that your own family are okay first before you then go to make sure the other families of the world are okay.
Well, they don't want us to have family, do they? They like us to be isolated individuals. I'm sure they'll use that again. They'll say, like, look, you know, when you had families, this is what you did to the Jews, and we can't allow this to happen again. And they'll go down that road of, you know, splitting everybody up.
Well, that's a pretty good potted version of the authoritarian personality. That is what they did, didn't they, at Frankfurt School after the war.
Exactly.
They said, right, well, we've got to analyse this, and what was it that made these goyim rise up and kick the Jews out of Europe? It was authoritarianism. Where does authoritarianism come from? It's the father in the family, so we must attack the family. It's the family that's wrong. It's the father as the authoritarian figure. He's the one we must attack. And that was this book, The Authoritarian Personality. And ever since then, they've tried to destroy the family through whatever means they can. Promotion of single parents.
Numerous ways.
No-fault divorce. Abortions, contraception, encouragement of homosexuality, race mixing, any way that they can to attack the family and the family unit, they will. A constant mocking.
Yeah, well, the tech kids now, three or four-year-olds, take them away from the parents and schools, and then they'll indoctrinate them. And the parents won't have any chance really to match that indoctrination, because they're going to have them all day, and the parents are going to be coming home too tired to even attempt. So that's what they're planning.
Well, they try and tell us that everyone is our family. We're all just one human race.
Yeah.
It's only us that get told that. The Jews don't get told that, obviously.
No, not at all. No. They keep their race as it is.
You have laws that are reminiscent of the Nuremberg race laws, don't they? For people wanting to come into Israel, they have to have genetic tests, they have to have DNA tests, and they can't.
Yeah.
If they are Jewish and they're in Israel, they can only marry other Jews. They can't marry out. They have advertising to encourage them to stick with their own. And if we ever do anything like that, then it's the end of the world. Hate speech. Yeah. Hate speech. Well,
because they didn't take no immigrants at all, did they? You know, when the mass immigration started, you know, to speed up a couple of years ago, Israel didn't take a one.
Oh, no. But Israel does help them, though, doesn't it? They may not take them into Israel, but they do help them by shoveling them off into other countries. If any of them do come into Israel, then they do a deal with Sweden, or they do a deal with Germany or Canada to take them instead. Israel just keeps them all in a prison camp in the Sinai desert there in the sweltering heat. It tells them that if they don't go, they will sterilize them if they're Negroes. And if they still won't go after that, then they say, right, well, we'll do a deal to send you off to Canada or Sweden. Great humanitarians, Israel are. And they've also got their aid companies, their NGOs that go out to places like Greece. And again, help the refugees in Greece. And once they land on the beach there, they give them smartphones and advice on how to claim benefits and give them maps of how to get to North Europe. Wonderful humanitarian
agenda, which they managed to practically pull off. Amazing, you know, how we've been so gullible. Or the traitors as well. They've got to come into play as well.
Well, everything they do is couched in these terms that, you know, what they're doing is helping people, but really they should be helping the countries that have actually been kind enough to allow them in. They say, oh, we were refugees and we were refugees when we came to Britain, so it's our duty to help all the refugees of the world. No, it isn't. It's their duty to help the British people who were kind enough to let them in, which means they should be advocating not to allow any other refugees into Britain. They should be looking out for the best interests of the British people, but they're not. They're trying to make laws to allow in as many refugees as possible, and they say their loyalty is to these other refugees. It is completely back to front when you think about it.
Yeah, there was something the other day about somebody in the EU was saying that Britain needs to take more Africans, because even if it's come out with a Brexit, you know, Africa's got nothing to do with Europe, you know what I mean?
Well, the EU is saying that we've got to take all the surplus Africans. There's going to be 2 billion of them by 2050. There's 1 billion of them now. They're not of any use to Africa. Africa just wants to get rid of them as quickly as possible. Somalia has said that it will only accept 12 a year back from Denmark of its surplus Africans. Yeah, I couldn't believe that. And instead of Denmark saying, well, you will accept back as many Somalians as we tell you, they are your citizens, the Danes have said, okay, we'll accept just giving you 12 back a year and we'll help you train your police in exchange. It's crazy. There's not even any war in Somalia. Yeah. But we just bend over backwards for them. The EU has said that there's going to be so many of them by 2050 that we've got to open up Europe to them, because there isn't enough opportunities for them in Africa. If they can't make opportunities and make a life for themselves in their own home country, then they're certainly not going to be able to in a foreign country. They're just going to be a drain on resources. Just, yes, that's all they are.
And it's Ireland suffering from Somalian gangs at the moment.
Everywhere it does, it has them. And Australia, they can't deal with them. If they try to arrest them, then all the rest of them will riot and they'll be accused of being racist if they do. So they just have a hands-off approach, which just means that these Negro gangs can rob as many shops, rob as many people as they like. In Ireland, the Hells Angels had to get involved in one area because the police just said, yeah, we can't do anything with it. And still, it keeps coming. The Irish government have paid out, I forget how much money it was, millions to the mainstream media over there and to say to them, you can only print positive news stories about migration because we want to import 2 million of them over the next 2 years. And they paid the all the mainstream media companies to do that. So you won't read negative news stories about them in Ireland, even though this is happening there. You got feral groups of them running riot.
I think it was Goebbels or Hitler who said they didn't want to be a part of this. You know, once the war was over, they didn't want to be a part of this new world. And you know what they mean now.
Well, they were very far thinking ahead. Well, let's get back to these. Yeah. Getting back to these documents and whether they're actually accurate, because we've got some quotes here to state that they are authentic. Don't forget, these are supposedly taken from the Polish Foreign Ministry. And we've got Charles C. Chancel, American historian, professor in history. He considered the documents genuine, and he stated M. Lipski, the Polish ambassador in Berlin in the pre-war years, assured me that the documents in the German white paper are authentic. Now, that's the Polish ambassador in Berlin saying that they were authentic, and you would think that the Polish ambassador in Berlin wouldn't be very happy about the Germans and the Germans invading Poland. So, you know, he's got nothing to gain by saying these are authentic. If he wasn't an honest man, he would have said they're inauthentic. Mm. So that's, you know, I would say that that's very strong proof that they are authentic for him to be saying that. We've got historian Harry Elmer Barnes. He also stated, both Professor Tansil and myself have independently established the thorough authenticity of these documents. Edward Rosinski, the Polish ambassador to London from 1934 to 1945, confirmed in his diary the authenticity of the Polish documents. He wrote in his entry on June the 20th, 1940, I do not know where they got them, since we were told that the archives had been destroyed, but the documents are certainly genuine, and the facsimiles show that for the most part, the Germans got hold of the originals and not merely the copies. Well, that confirms the idea that when the SS actually got there to the Foreign Office, the Poles were there shoveling them into the incinerator. And that's when they actually got hold of them. They got hold of the originals from the original office. And these Poles were already trying to destroy them. You know, I guess they didn't know, you know, quite what was going to happen, because obviously these Poles, they want these documents to be shown because it shows that America was working with the Soviets. But the Poles at the time, I guess they thought that they could get one over on Germany, didn't they, really?
Well, they had the guarantee that Britain and France would join in.
Yeah. So they were thinking that they were on the winning side at the time. So
they were thinking, our border is Berlin.
Yeah, and then they got burned after the war and handed over to the Soviets.
And don't forget, that's a Catholic population, so the roads would get burned after the war.
Yeah, that to it as well. The official papers and memoirs of Julius Lukaszewicz, published in 1970 by Diplomat in Paris, 1936 to 1939, reconfirmed the authenticity of the Polish documents. Lukaszewicz was the Polish ambassador to Paris who authored several of the secret Polish documents. The collection was edited by Raclaw Jędrzejewicz, a former Polish diplomat and cabinet member. Jędrzejewicz considered the documents made public by the Germans absolutely genuine and quoted from several of them. How can they still, how can the rest of the world, the rest of the establishment just ignore these and pretend that it doesn't exist? How can Google, you know, just think the White Book doesn't exist?
I was thinking that, and I thought, at that time, obviously, like, you know, they're not going to believe the Germans after all that propaganda. But even today, right, we're now going into a debate on YouTube about Pearl Harbor. They're just not having it. They just don't have it. So what chance did the Germans have?
Was there mention, any more mention about Japan, China, Pearl Harbor, that sort of thing in these documents, you know?
But I think one of the reasons why Pearl Harbor was important to America was the fact that it stopped Japan then attacking Russia from the east. Because it would have had the Germans coming in from the west and the Japanese from the east. But that then, as in the greater story it said, released these armies in the east so they could come to help in, the defense of Moscow. And consequently, if the Japanese hadn't invaded, they wouldn't have been able to do that, obviously.
All right, so he's cutting the Japanese off from going after the Chinese and the Chinese to prevent the Chinese from helping the Soviets.
And plus it's a back door for America to get into Europe.
Right.
By declaring war on Japan.
We've got another confirmation here. Tyler G. Kent, who worked at the US Embassy in London in 1939 and 1940, has also confirmed the authenticity of the secret Polish documents. Kent says that he saw copies of US diplomatic messages in the files which corresponded to the Polish documents. And just remember that none of these documents were allowed to be used in the Nuremberg trials. Even though they were all genuine, authentic documents that proved the defence's case, none of them were allowed to be used. And yet that Nuremberg trial is put forward as that's a standard. That was a really high standard in war crimes, that all cases ever since then, all international cases ever since then, have looked to the Nuremberg trials as being the standard.
Yeah.
And they weren't allowed to use any defence.
All the real criminals have never been sent to the Hague, have they?
And I guess this is why they think it's a bit of a joke, didn't they? Milosevic, he knew that he wasn't going to get a fair trial.
Bush has never gone anywhere near the place, has he?
To be honest. Yeah, Bush. Yeah,
the White Book, sorry, it was banned eventually in America. Britain banned it illegally. It's probably one of the reasons why they did it.
Well, it was actually properly banned. The book itself is banned. They won't acknowledge it.
Well, yeah. That's right, yeah. It was legal to do it, but they did it.
Yeah, they published it, but they won't acknowledge it because the government that actually put it out is no more, I guess. And it's strange because Germany's the only country, I think, that's ever happened to. At the end of the war, they just destroyed everything to do with the National Socialists. They didn't, you know, at the end of a war, what normally happens with the handing over and the surrender, none of that happened.
Or the war trials, that's the first time that's ever happened.
Yeah, that's not, incredibly dishonourable thing to do, isn't it, really? I mean, if somebody's surrendered to you, you don't then put them on trial for defending themselves.
Yeah, or send them back.
Send them back to the Soviets.
Yeah,
all sitting wicked fighting against them.
The repatriations. The British refused to accept the Croatian surrender. That's what's said, but I know the Croatian surrenders. They threw down their arms.
And they refused to accept it.
So what Wiki says. Yeah.
What was their thinking behind that then? Was saying they refused to accept their surrender?
Well, obviously, they'd gone they didn't want to surrender to the communists, so they thought the best idea would be to surrender to the West. But I think it was always in the pipeline somewhere on the lines, did to the Cossacks, sent these prisoners back because, well, one, they're white, and two, they're an enemy. So they just get rid of them by sending them back. How many? Must have been a few million. Because even some American soldiers have never returned from Russia That's been hidden in the archives as well, never been opened. Why these Americans? I'm not sure how many, a couple of hundred maybe. Stalin kept them so that these agreements will be kept to. All these people will be sent back, but he never sent the Americans back.
Yeah, he threatened. He was like, they were like a bargaining chip for him, weren't they?
Yeah, that's right. If you want them back, then you send these others back to us, you know.
When you think about all the guilt that we're supposed to feel today for these refugees that come from the third world that are nothing whatsoever to do with us, that have travelled through a dozen countries or whatever to actually reach Europe instead of claiming protection in the first country that they come to. And then you've got what happened at the end of the war, where they're turning away white people that are trying to surrender, that have been fighting to protect Europe from the Bolsheviks, and they're just turning them around to the Bolsheviks. And
yeah,
doing huge amounts of ethnic cleansing with countries that had been German for hundreds of years that were now suddenly parts of Poland or parts of Russia that were cut off from Germany. Yeah. And all the Germans were told to just get out and walk back to Germany.
Yeah, which were in the state anyway.
Yeah, 2 million of them or something like that. And then they say, we couldn't possibly say to the non-whites in our countries that you're going to have to go back to your own homeland. Couldn't possibly say that. We can quite happily kick all these white people out of the countries that they've lived in for hundreds of years. That's absolutely fine. That's not going to be talked about. There's not going to be any memorial services for them or what happened to the white people at the end of the war. We'll just have our special Holocaust Remembrance Day every year. Yeah, it's just never talked about, is it? What happened to all the whites and the Germans at the end of the war? It's just never mentioned. Well, I've got some more here.
It actually took a big hit, didn't it, really? I mean, when you think about it, World War I, World War II, massive hit.
Well, the Germans, I don't think they've ever recovered. You think of what was done to them nationally. All the rapes of the Red Army. The lies, all the Germans that were sent off to the camps in the gulags and then returned
slavery
later on. The Germans that were deliberately starved in those camps in the fields with no shelter, digging holes in the field in which to try and live for a year. Anyone tried to feed them was shot. And they're not allowed to talk about it. They're not allowed to discuss it. I mean, I can remember when I was a kid, I was being taught about the war, and I was always told that at the end of the war, they said to the Germans, they just cut out all of their history for the last 50 years, and they weren't taught about it. And I used to think, well, that must be really strange. How, you know, to suddenly go from, 1900 up to 1950, surely they must have, been curious about what had happened in those 50 years. You know, I was being taught about kids like 5, 6 years old at school, and they were just told nothing happened then. You're not allowed to know about it. And that is pretty much what they did.
Well, that's why they've all got baseball caps to then pretend that
they're... Well, they don't understand it. I saw an interview the other day with Millennial Woes with a German school teacher. He used to be a school teacher. And he's obviously just sort of finding all this out. And... You know, I've seen a few Germans like that, and they just come across as very, very innocent. So innocent, and such good people as well. Really not the sort of people that would ever do anything like the atrocities that have been attributed to them. It's just not in their nature at all. Mm. They'd be horrified. I mean, so on top of all these horrible things that have happened to them, they then, had this horrible slander made against them that they tried to kill an entire race. And it's like they've just sort of curled up and, we'll just try and die as quickly as we can, and we'll stop producing children, and we'll import as many foreigners as we can to replace ourselves. Terrible.
The intensity of the denazification was they actually believed it. They believed what they said the Nazis did. And so when you've got that in burnt in you, any normal person who truly believes that will be full of guilt and, like you say, just curl up.
And that's what's happened. Well, Back to these documents. The German Foreign Office published the Polish documents on March the 29th, 1940. So they were published. The Reich Ministry of Propaganda released the documents to strengthen the case of the American isolationists and to prove the degree of America's responsibility for the outbreak of war. So these documents were known in America. It's not like they suddenly produced them at the Nuremberg trials. These documents had been known. They'd been published over there for 3 years, and they were just still not allowed to be used in these trials, even though they were known about. I mean, that's really dishonest.
Because there were a big fuss made about it, apparently. You know, the press did get hold of it, and but to no avail, so they decided denying it. You know, pointless exercise.
Well, I would guess that very few people had actually seen those documents up until the age of the internet.
No, I never seen
when they're actually able to be published. I mean, you could look them up now, and you can look at the German White Book, and you can just be amazed at the lies that we've been told.
Yeah, and it's never ending, to be honest.
And we've just gone through some of the confirmation of the authenticity of them. But it's interesting to find out how they actually came across them.
Well, they did a similar thing with the crown jewels in Austria. Sent an SS guy ahead 3 or 4 days, told to shoot anybody who tried to take them. So it's implied that Hitler must have used one or two times.
So he protected them.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we've come to the end of the podcast, Dennis. Thank you very much. Coming on, you better say happy Christmas to our listeners for next week, because the next time
I certainly will. Happy Christmas, and hope you all have a good time, merry, and full of good food and drink.
And so do I. And we'll be back next Friday with more Truth While Out Radio for you. And of course, we do hope you have a great weekend and a very happy Christmas.
To Radio Ariane.